Sometimes even the House Majority Leader can't get his fellow Republicans to agree when it comes to taking care of schools.
Education, in my view, is the toughest issue we deal with in Jeff City.
Representative Mike Searpoy tells us how he plans to get stuff done this week on Statehouse Blend, Missouri. From KCUR 89.3, this is Statehouse Blend, Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll talk with Mike Searpoy in a moment, but first, this week in Jefferson City, lawmakers put their nose to the grindstone on legislation and hearings. 2 weeks ago, it was right to work. Last week, it was paycheck protection. And this week's bill, that's seen as pro-business by Republicans and anti-union by Democrats, is PLAs, Project Labor Agreements. Some municipalities use them. They require non-union workers to pay union dues when working on a local construction project. Sponsors, like Republican Representative Robert Vescovo, call that legal extortion.
86% of those men and women don't get to bid or compete on those jobs. And when they do get to bid on those jobs, they have to become signatory against their own will and pay dues to an organization that they don't agree with.
Democrats say those requirements really aren't so burdensome. Identical bills passed in the House and Senate on Thursday. Another committee heard testimony on a bill that would make it harder for workers to win a discrimination case against their employer. One place where discrimination and harassment has been very much on display this week is the Missouri Department of Corrections, where hearings continued into a second week. Last week, new department director Ann Presythe promised changes.
The zero tolerance does not necessarily mean everybody gets put on administrative leave or subsequently gets fired, but it means that we're going to take all complaints seriously and we're going to look into them. That, to me, is what really gets to creating a safe environment.
But this week's testimony shows there's a long way to go. Legislators blasted the department in bipartisan fashion over what they called a dysfunctional management structure, expressing their displeasure to the inspector general, among others, saying that even she didn't seem to understand the extent of the problem. And the Missouri House found bipartisan support this week for two other bills designed to show support for those who helped fill up those prisons in the first place. The House passed a bill to increase penalties for crimes committed against law enforcement officers and another to set up a so-called blue alert system for tracking down those alleged to have assaulted cops, similar to the Amber Alert system that uses phones and broadcast stations to find missing children. Those bills, which now head to the Senate, were among the top legislative priorities of Republican Governor Eric Greitens. Joining us this week in the KCUR production studio is the House Majority Leader, Mike Searpoy, a Republican of Lee's Summit. Mike Searpoy, welcome. We've been waiting for you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we could make time for it today.
I'm delighted. Really glad you could make time. And also joining us by phone, another busy guy, our guy in Jefferson City, State House reporter Marshall Griffin. Marshall, good to have you here.
Thank you very much.
And I want to start, Mike, can I call you Mike? Is that all
yes,
right?
Yes, you can.
Okay,
I prefer that.
Okay, very good. Well, I want to start by asking you about the difference this year managing a Republican agenda with Governor Eric Greitens in place, who's likely to sign the bills you send him, rather than someone who will veto them, like former Governor Jay Nixon. Does that in some ways make your job easier? Does it embolden you to put the pedal to the metal on legislation, or does it make your job harder? Is there more pressure to get it right and seek consensus since you know it's probably going to become law?
I think it's the second. The Speaker, Todd Richardson, and I spoke on election night. We were both down at Jeff City at the HRCC headquarters watching the results come in, and we both were very happy with the results, but also very aware that it really matters now what we pass.
Does that suggest that there was some sense that it didn't matter quite as much before because you knew the governor would veto it anyway?
I think there was a sense that we knew where he was on some of these major issues, tort reform, labor reform, education reform, and we were careful, but we also were aware that we're going to need 109 at some point, and some of those issues we were never going to have 109 on.
109, the majority needed to pass, the two-thirds to overcome the veto. We heard Governor Greitens' priorities at the start of the session. Jobs, public safety, ethics. We're a little more than a month into the session now. Mm-hmm. What are your priorities, yours as a caucus or yours as a leader? Are they the same as the governor's?
I think they align very much. Since I've been down in Jeff City, I have worked on education reform. I was very involved with the two transfer bills that we passed that the governor vetoed. And I'm really happy that that our governor and our president, in fact, have talked about doing something to help the kids in these suffering districts, mostly in poverty areas in St. Louis and Kansas City, Ferguson, what is going on there. Only way we fix those things is by giving those folks a decent education and a decent chance at doing well in life.
you're speaking pretty positively of the governor and his leadership. Do you work with him often? What's your relationship like?
I have visited more with him in the last month than I did with the Governor Nixon in 6 years.
I do have to say you're we had Senator Hoskins on the program last week, mm-hmm. Your former colleague in House leadership.
I live with Denny.
You share space in Jeff City?
I do.
Well, then you know very well his experience with the governor a couple weeks ago. The governor I think it's safe to say, strong-armed him a little bit over a vote in the Senate. He called him out on Twitter. Have you experienced any of that?
No, I haven't. And I, what goes on in the building is fine, and pressures are applied by everybody. I'm hearing from education folks now. That's just, when we run for office, we sign up for that. The public stuff is a little bit different. It's a little harder to – it makes feelings a little raw, and it's a little tougher to get beyond. So I haven't experienced it, and I'm not in the Senate, so I will let senators discuss that.
Well, okay. So here's one of the things senators discuss, and they say it in a way that, I don't know, might even be a little disparaging of the House. I think we've had Senators Holzman and Sylvie on the program say talk about the Houseification of the Senate, that the Senate is a place where every senator is sort of independent. They each have a fair amount of ability to slow down a bill or defeat it. They aren't just herded into their caucuses and do what they're told by leadership. That's what the House does, is the implication. Do you feel like that's the kind of is that how the House operates? You're the House Majority Leader.
Well, the House rules are a lot different than the Senate. The Senate is supposed to be just like on the national level, more deliberative, and they are. I don't think they should become the House of Representatives. People say we are a herd, but we really are not. We've got a great deal of diversity in our own caucus. As you know, on right to work and some of the other labor bills, we had a lot of Republicans. Unlike the Democrats, we had a lot of Republicans vote against those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got a great deal of diversity in our caucus. But the rules in the Senate do allow a lot more dissension or make it more difficult. And as a citizen, I love that because I don't want the government to pass things quickly. As a legislator, sometimes it's a little bit frustrating, but we'll live with it.
And if I could jump in a second, some might argue that the so-called Houseification of the Senate has been going on, long before Eric Greitens became governor. There have been more PQs in the Senate in recent years.
It's the previous question motions that end debate.
Right.
I mean, it's something that, Representative Sirpoy can attest to this, it's something that regularly happens in the House and is just normal there. If after a couple hours you're ready to vote, you PQ and you vote. In the Senate, a PQ is almost considered like an insult, a personal insult to whoever's filibustering the bill. So it has different ramifications in the Senate than it does in the House. But and I think there was maybe a period of 6 or 7 years where there was not a PQ, and then 2 years ago there was one, and then last year there were a couple, and they've added up in the Senate, and some might argue that equates to the quote unquote Houseification of the Senate, but mm-hmm. the Senate is still a very slow deliberative body.
Well, I think part of the issue is it aligns real well with the term limits. I think term limits has changed a lot of things. The Senate used to have senators that were there for a long, long time, and I'm not recommending that's what we want to go back to. But the relationships were stronger, and they just worked together in a more serious way. Big issues took a while, but eventually they found their way through. But now, senators, just like House members, you have 8 years, and I think that has broken down some of those relationships.
Senator Tim Green, who is now a lobbyist, he was term limited out, and one of the things that he told me one time was, right about the time that he was reaching his eighth year, he was, I'm just now really figuring out how to do this job, and now I've got to leave.
It is. People, I understand folks don't like politicians. They hate us. They would vote for 2-year term limits if they could. It's just, I just don't know that serves. We're doing now with this healthcare stuff, with Medicaid, block grants coming maybe in a year. All of them are very, education reform, they're very complex subjects. And it takes a while to get a knowledge base. I can talk about most things now and sound like I know what I'm talking about, but when you dig in the details, I'm still struggling with a lot of them.
You mentioned the diversity in the House Republican Caucus, and you mentioned right to work being an mm-hmm. example of that. There were a handful, a good number of Republicans mm-hmm. who voted against that. What other issues do you think there are diversity there's diversity of views on in the Republican caucus.
Education reform. Education, in my view, is the toughest issue we deal with in Jeff City.
Say more about the diversity of views.
As far as the reform versus the more traditional public education, and part of that is based on geography. Rural districts, it's not unusual for a rural representative to have 6, 7, 8 districts in his within his House district. And their superintendents and the leadership of the school districts are usually pretty active in the communities. And that's what I've always, in the transfer bills, I tried to make a difference between Kansas City and St. Louis and the rural areas. And I found that if you could carve them out, because the fact is we're really not trying to change them. We're not trying to do much to the rural districts. They do a pretty good job. The people are happy with the districts. We're trying to do something that gives people in Ferguson and some of the struggling districts in the North St. Louis access to better schools. And over here, Kansas City at one time was teetering that way. We'll see if it continues to improve. But Hickman Mills and some of these other districts give those kids access to good buildings. And that's been a tripwire we've dealt with. We're dealing with it again this year. But it's by far the toughest issue we deal with. And there is a lot of people in our caucus that are very careful when it comes to public education and reform.
Do you think there will be a bill that comes out this year on it, bringing education reform?
I do. I think in the next couple of weeks we'll finally get one out of committee and we'll hit the floor with it.
And what will it say?
It'll be about charter expansion. There's going to be some education savings account bills coming out. I think those are probably going to start in the Senate. And they're mostly, I think, for the disabled kids. But we're going to deal with charter expansion, I think, primarily in the House.
The other piece of legislative priorities that everyone talked about at the start of the session, governor and legislative leaders, was ethics reform. There's obviously been one big piece of legislation, the lobbyist gift ban, but it's maybe I'm wrong about this, but it appears that that's slowed down considerably. You don't hear much about ethics reform the last few weeks. Is this the end of ethics reform for 2017? Is that issue dead?
No, it's in the Senate now, and the Senate, again, the rules. I can jump around on my calendar. We call them calendars. They're really lists, the perfection calendar, the third read calendar. I skip around, and if there's priorities, you have to leave it there a day because that's what the rules require. But then I can go to it at any time. In the Senate, they have to work in order. And if you look at their calendars, they're getting pretty crowded, and so it's going to take a while to get some of these bills. And the gift ban is over there. I don't think they'll pass it as it is. They'll probably modify it. But I think they're going to spend some time on it. And this year we've got a governor that's really pushing and he's a Republican, so I'm hopeful for it. I'm not predicting it's going to pass, but I'm hopeful we'll get there.
Let's turn to legislation on labor issues.
Okay.
Project labor agreements legislation passed this week over the objections of unions. Paycheck protection last week, which unions call paycheck deception. Okay. Right to work, of course, now signed into law. Mike, is the Republican Party in Missouri anti-union?
I don't think so. I used to be. I have union guys come in my office. I talk to them all the time. And I try to be respectful because I was one. I worked for Southwestern Bell for 38 years. And half of that time I was in the union. I don't think of it that way. I think that the right to work thing is, I don't think it's a death knell. I think both sides overstate. I don't think it's going to cause an economic boom in this state. I just think it makes us more competitive. As one of the reps said on the floor, it's not a deal maker, but it is a deal breaker. Companies will not look at us unless we're that way. And I also don't think it's the death knell of unions. Some of the fastest growing union membership states are right to work because the manufacturing is coming back to them. So I think both sides overstate it, which in Jeff City that happens all the time. As far as PLAs, I think it's good for Missouri. Paycheck protection is one that is something we've been doing for a long time. Last year we had some carve-outs for firefighters and first responders. I don't know if that will happen this year or not. You know, it's funny when people always – We had a compromise last year that was a good one, I thought, but then it didn't pass the Senate. And now they're coming back and they're wanting that compromise again when, in fact, last year they were able to stop it. So people, when they're in a power of strength, a position of strength, sometimes they're not so willing to compromise, and then they are when the earth moves under their feet. So,
Marshall, you've been covering the way the legislature's handled labor issues now for many years. What do you see that's different this year?
Well, the difference this year mainly was there was just basically kind of a concession that the right to work was going to happen. When it comes to another issue, the Senate Democrats have promised they're going to put up a bigger fight, and that's going to be with prevailing wage. We can expect to see a concerted effort to stop that in its tracks, but at the same time, I don't know if their efforts will be successful, because we have seen Republican Senate leadership willing to pull out the PQ. Ron Richard has said, I'm willing to let them talk, but I've got my priorities too, and I want to see those done.
Marshall, give us the one sentence summary of what prevailing wage law is.
Basically, prevailing wage has to do with the amount of money, and Sirpour, you can jump in if I'm getting something technically wrong here. The amount of money that is required to be paid to workers on various construction projects, and that wage is set by labor unions.
Right, that non-union workers would have to be paid the prevailing wage for union workers in a given place.
And the argument is that hurts small business owners, especially in rural areas.
Right. I want to ask you about this, Mike, because the prevailing wage legislation is an example of it. So is the PLA legislation, where local municipalities that adopt these provisions would be penalized. A city, Kansas City, Missouri, sets up a contract with to build a city building, and includes as part of that contract that non-union workers have to join the union to be part of that project or pay union dues.
Right.
The city would be penalized for adopting a contract like that. Republicans have generally been on the side of local control. Wanted to see less state regulation of how municipalities went about their business. I mean, is that fair to say? And is this in tension with that?
Well, one of the problems we have, if it's a problem, is we've had this issue with Uber, with minimum wage,
right,
with cell towers a couple of years ago. We've got a couple of very blue cities and a very red state. And so that's one of the issues we have. As far as prevailing wage, it's applied to public works projects. We have a lot of rural districts. Right now there's four or five bills percolating in the House on prevailing wage, and they go from banning it to making it carving out small counties, maybe make it a cap that only applies to projects over $1 million or $1.5 million. There's a lot of different renditions of it, and I'm not convinced that we need to eliminate it. It needs to be modified, and this is the first year that's actually been possible. There's too many categories, because that's how it goes by, and it's not. It's part of the problem is the businesses don't report wages. Everybody's supposed to report wages to build a prevailing wage for a county, and they don't. And so many times, these rural areas are paying Kansas City and St. Louis wages, which drives the cost up substantially. And so I'm not sure which compromise will come through. I will support whatever comes out of the committees. But I know a lot of people are looking at it and trying to find a way through it right now.
Marshall Griffin, what questions do you have for House Majority Leader Mike Sirpour?
I was supposed to bring a list of questions.
No, off the top of your head.
Well, my main question right now, it goes to the process of setting up the and getting the state budget passed this year. As we all know, Governor Greitens unveiled his budget priorities in early February, and not during the State of the State address. And I haven't looked at the House calendar today, but I've been looking at it, and I still see that this year's budget bills have yet to be filed. How soon can we expect to see that happen?
I think in a couple of weeks. They're still doing testimony with all the department heads. In fact, this week, if you notice, we only had morning session. We came in at 10 and usually got out by 12:30 or so. The budget chair asked me not to have afternoon sessions because the budget committee needs time to work. And I'm sure I'll get a text this weekend at some point asking me to do the same thing this week. So, and that's not a reflection of him. It's just a reflection of getting the budget and the timeline they did and the amount of work they have to do.
In other words, the budget came later than it usually does.
It usually comes, as I said, at the State of the Union. And this year, the governor waited till later. And I think one thing we have is Scott Fitzpatrick is our budget chair. He's a junior, which means probably we're going to have a four-year budget chair. Scott's a really bright guy with numbers, and I'm really happy that he's there, because that's a really important job, and you have to know where all the bodies are to do things. And as I've told people, when I'm in Jeff City and a lobbyist comes and talks to me, they rarely lie to you, but they always tell you a version of the truth. And having a four-year budget chair is going to help, because he will know things and understand things, so he'll be harder to hide things from. And so They're working hard. I've never been on budget, so some of their work is mysterious to me, and it's very complicated. And I see them when they come out of there in the evening. They've been in there for 10 or 12 hours a day, and they look like the apocalypse when they walk out of there. But it's an enormous amount of work, and I'm glad those 30 people are willing to do it.
We'll look for some photos of the emergence of the budget committee from deliberations. I guess I'm curious. I know you're not on the committee, but obviously you have an important role in steering how things eventually end up on the floor. I mean, there were $500 million or more in cuts mm-hmm. proposed in the governor's budget to things like agriculture and higher education and social services. Mm-hmm. Do you think that cuts to spending almost across the board are going to be how the House goes about solving the massive shortfall that looks like it will exist in the 2018 budget? Or do you see other solutions? Do you see anything that would raise revenues in any way coming out of this session?
Well, there's talk that we're going to put together a committee of six people to study the tax credits. And I think everybody agrees that needs to be looked at. They're far too unresponsive to the economic times. Because they get granted and they don't pay out for a few years. And we have to get a way to probably shrink them. I think everybody knows that they need to be pulled back. What that number will be, I'm not sure. But so that work's in progress. But again, if we ended them today, it would be 2 or 3 years before we saw any benefit because they pay out as the project's complete. But the governor's budget is a tough one. I think they're working with him now. The social services part for the in-home care and nursing home care
disability
are going to be very difficult. We've met and talked about that some. I'm not convinced that it won't drive up costs in the long run, but it's all under study right now, and I think we'll come to the one thing that I've been really pleased with the Republican majority, and I'm not saying this isn't true of the Democrats. I've just never worked under those circumstances. They're very aware of disabilities and people with disabilities and family with kids with disabilities. And so I think they'll find a way through that. And this in-home and nursing home care is mostly for disabled people and seniors on Medicaid. And so I think they're looking for a way through that. We have got to get a handle on Medicaid expenditures. We have not expanded, and they are growing all the time. And it is the biggest driver in our budget right now.
And although I think I know the answer to this question, I'll ask anyway. I mean, Medicaid expansion would be one way to bring some federal dollars into the mix. Mm-hmm. We as a state are leaving federal money on the table. At least that's the argument the Democrats make by not expanding Medicaid and getting access to some of those dollars. So would you support expanding Medicaid?
No, but what I would expand, and when I mean, because I think one of the things we're dealing with now is probably a year from now we'll be getting a block grant from the feds. And so I always thought that once President Obama was gone, it would allow a better conversation. Some of that heat would go away. But now that President Obama's gone, President Trump's talking about block grants, what delays the conversation until we see how that plays out.
This would be one of the possible alternatives to the Affordable Care Act as it's currently constructed, is instead of sending money as a reimbursement or as a match to states that in their Medicaid payments, it would just simply send block grants to the states to spend as they please.
Right, and we have to make sure that we're not punished because we did not expand, so the numbers we have presently are smaller than states that did expand. But also, we have to – I think there's a way there. I've always thought that if we're going to do something, I wouldn't call it expanding Medicaid, but if we're going to get into this program, we've been – Republicans have wanted to reform Medicaid for 20 years, and it's a great opportunity to do that, to make it – the outcomes in Medicaid are not always that great, and there's ways to do it. But within the next year, I think we'll be able to do some of those and bring those forward.
Want to kind of talk about a few other pieces of legislation because of your leadership role and the role that you may have in bringing these to the floor or not. Mm-hmm. A few weeks ago on the show, I can't even remember who our guest was, but we were marveling that at the lack of conversation around sort of those social issues that typically dominate discussion in the early weeks of a Missouri legislative session, especially things like abortion. And that was a few weeks ago. Now there's a multiplicity of bills some of which are getting some attention now. Representative Mike Moon, of course, has introduced a bill that would declare fetuses to be people and essentially make all abortions illegal. How high a priority is at this point, in this particular session, is legislation around abortion?
I will say that the Republican caucus is very pro-life. As far as bills this year, as floor leader, I'm not on committees. I don't really pay a lot of attention to a bill until it gets to my calendar. Because so many are getting my calendar, it takes a lot of time to read them and prepare. And so I haven't looked at that particular bill. It's probably similar to what he filed last year. But I haven't got any emails on it yet or anything, so there's not much attention on it at this point. So I really can't say what the future holds for it until it gets to me.
Do you think that's a good idea?
For the
House to pass legislation like the personhood amendment that Mike Moon has proposed, or any other bill regarding abortion? Is there a piece of Missouri's policy around abortion that needs changing at this time?
If I was king, I would have Roe overturned and return it to the states and let democracy work. I think we would figure out a way to get through it. We'd quit standing on street corners and screaming at each other. And I think nobody would be happy with what we come up with, but it would be a compromise that would take the issue and take some of the heat away from it. We've been doing this now for, 40 years?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like our politics, everything we scream at each other about is something the courts have stepped in, and they do it just like with gay marriage. I'm not a fan, but I could live with it. I think most states, just like abortion back in the early 70s, late 60s, some states were starting to moderate their abortion laws. If the courts would not jump in the middle of it, when your judge can beat up somebody else's judge, the compromise doesn't happen. I think if they let democracy work, we'd work our way through these things.
So then, because you're not king, you're a leader in the House.
Yes.
Do you think the House should pass something like that this year?
Again, I haven't looked at it, so I just hate to say for sure.
Sure. Marshall Griffin, is there any particular legislation you're thinking about?
Well, there is one that I actually left a message in your office, Representative, regarding redefining discrimination when it comes to employment and, you know, change going from contributing factor to a
motivating
factor, and that's something that has been vetoed in years past by Governor Nixon. And I got a message back saying yes, it is a priority to get that passed this year with the new governor. Do you see any road bumps for that?
Not in the House. I don't. I think there's three bills. And the hearing this week, you know, there are some issues, and I think they're going to rehear it. But I think eventually when it gets out of committee and gets to the calendar, I think we'll pass it without much problems. It's something that I've personally voted for before. It's something we're going to match the federal standard. I've talked to a lot of different companies and different company representatives, and it's something they really want. And it just makes it easier. I think serious cases can still come forward, but I think it makes it easier to sort through the ones that are not. Because right now it's with the contributing factor, that standard is so low, it's hard to get a summary judgment. This would make it so the more frivolous cases could be sorted through and the serious ones could move forward. Is the way I understand it, and I think, and that's why, like I said, I voted for it before, and I'll vote for it again.
And as I'm sure you have heard the testimony regarding that bill in House committee. During one of the testimonies, someone who was testifying against it and brought up the phrase, this would take us back to Jim Crow, got immediately gaveled, and a number of groups that support the African-American community are unhappy about that. And I've heard that the chairman of that committee is going to allow more testimony and, you know, allow that person to testify again. What have people been telling you about what happened there?
I think what you said is pretty close to what I've heard. Representative Lance, the chairman, and I think he admits that probably his fuse was a little short that day. And
it was the head of the NAACP in Missouri.
Right.
Jefferson City, I believe.
Jefferson
I
City.
I don't know if he's the state chair or the state or
it's
the
Rod
local Chappell, chair.
Rod Chappell, I believe, is his name.
Yeah.
And so I think they're going to rehear that bill and give him opportunity to talk again, and I think that will help. It was one of the days that that people got a little more excited. It's one of those things that in the heat of the moment, sometimes things happen and you don't realize how it looks otherwise. I keep reading, though, that Bill turned off his microphone. And as you know, in committees, you can't turn off a microphone. We don't have any controls. It's sitting on the base of the microphone. So you got to be either the guy talking or sitting next to him to turn it off. So that's a misquote. But he did gavel him, and I think that will be corrected this week.
You know, I'm curious. You're the House Majority Floor Leader,
mm-hmm.
but in that job, you don't necessarily personally sponsor a lot of bills. You don't go to the bank of microphones every time you see one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the House, you're not the Speaker. That's a different
right.
job. What does the House Majority Floor Leader do? How do you describe to people the unique qualities of this job?
Well, I always tease the speaker because he's got a real job. It's all day, every day, and nobody even knows who the floor leader is. The floor leader primarily is responsible for the floor activity. A bill is filed with the clerk's office. That's first and second read. Then it goes to the speaker's office, and when he is ready, he refers it to whatever committee he feels is appropriate. It goes through the committee process. This year it goes through the rules process, another committee that it feeds up through for more vetting. And then it comes out and goes to what we call the perfection calendar. Then it becomes my possession. I get to control it. I determine when the floor debate will occur, how long the debate will last, and when the vote will take. And I like the job. You're in the back of the chamber. You're not in the front of the chamber. I'd much rather work. I'm not knocking any style. I just like working quietly behind the scenes and explaining things to people. I find that much more productive. And it doesn't matter to me if somebody else gets a lot of credit for things, as long as we get things done. And that's why I like this job a lot.
And you talk about liking this job, but you can't have this job past this term. You're right. Going to be term limited out of the House.
Right.
What's next for Representative Mike Searpoy?
Well, my service in the representative is aligned with my senator in the 8th Senate District, Senator Krause. We both term out at the same time, so I'm going to probably take a look at that. But there's several of us that will, because in Eastern Jack, many of us came in at the same time, in the same cycle. So it'll be a giant food fight, and we'll see what happens.
But you're willing to engage in a food fight.
I'm going to run for the Senate, and we'll see what happens. I mean, they're my friends. They're good people. So whatever happens, I'm sure we'll be well served out there.
Have you announced that before this moment?
I've changed my campaign. And with the MEC, you have to show what your election is when you have a candidate committee. And so in December, I showed the 8th Senate District as the target. I haven't really said much because I'm so busy. I've told people that say I should announce. I say at the end of the session, I'll announce. And I mean, as in a public thing, maybe have an event in my district or something like that. But I'm not hiding it, so it's not a secret.
Not a big secret.
No.
We're not breaking too much news here
on
State House Blue, Missouri. Oh, well, darn. I was hoping we'd have a big scoop on that. Thanks to our guest today, Marshall Griffin of St. Louis Public Radio. Marshall, thanks.
Thank you very much.
And Representative Mike Searpoy, Republican from Lee Summit and the House Majority Floor Leader. Thank you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
State House Blend Missouri is produced by Matt Hodapp. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast. And if you've already done that and you like what you hear, please post a review. Don't forget, you can also find us now on the NPR One app. Just search for us in Explore and tap Follow. If you use Twitter, you can keep up on the show that way too. I'm at PTS Brian. You can follow the host of State House Blend Kansas at Sam Zeff. And we try to use the hashtag StateHouseBlend. You can find a shorter version of us on the air on Tuesday mornings as part of Up to Date at 11 a.m. on KCUR. And if you have any other thoughts, write me on email. I'm at brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for listening.